Story that's told about Reb Shmelka Mnikolsburg. He was one of the great Hasidisha Rebbes back in the 700s, lived in the mid-1700s. So the story goes that when he came to his town, the practice was in that town that any visiting prominent individual that came through the town used to write something in the community ledger, some nice practice that everyone should take upon themselves to start observing. So this one would write that maybe, you know, you should... everyone wrote something extra special that somebody should do. So that's Reb Shmelka, when he came to town, that he should also write something in the community ledger that they should take upon themselves. And he's thinking, he doesn't know what to write. And finally, after a couple of days, he goes to the ledger and he writes something in there. And everybody goes afterward to see what did Reb Shmelka, after days and days of thinking, what did he write? So it turns out he wrote out the Aseres HaDibros in the ledger. So they're all wondering, what's that about? So he said, well, the truth is, so often when we find people... When you hear about a nice new chumrah, you hear about a nice new idea, of course you're very careful to take that upon yourself and to be very careful to observe it to the best, to the max. And he said sometimes the good old Aseres HaDibros that are the fundamental underpinnings of all the Torah that we believe in, somehow that gets thrown by the wayside. Somehow that doesn't get all the attention it should. And he said that's why I decided to write it in the community ledger. People should remind themselves that Aseres HaDibros are very important. And Aseres HaDibros are something which we should remind ourselves of all the time. So that's what we'll give a shiur about this morning. Whether or not really it is proper for the Aseres HaDibros to be highlighted over and above any other part of the Torah, or should we assume that the whole entirety of the Torah is extremely important? Now, by way of introduction to this very important topic, the Rishonim write very clearly. Rashi writes this in Parshas Mishpatim, Rav Sadia Gaon has like this, the Ramban has it as well, that the Aseres HaDibros are the Yesod Kol HaTorah Kula. In fact, the Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishmaya to Maseches Tamid, the Rambam says, "Heim ikar hadas v'reishiso," says the Rambam. This is the fundamental of all the Torah that we believe in, of all the mitzvahs that we observe. Everything can be found and everything is really stemming from the Aseres HaDibros that we read in our Parsha, Parshas Yisro. What's interesting to note is that the Yerushalmi writes in the first parak in Brachos. Now this Yerushalmi is something that's quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, and we're not going to go through the whole thing. It's just fascinating to read on your own, where the Yerushalmi tells us that really Kriya Shema, which we know we recite every morning and every evening, Kriya Shema is something which is a staple of our religion, a staple of our belief. But in Kriya Shema every day, says the Yerushalmi, we have a reference not only to the Avas Hashem, to the Yiras Hashem, not only to the fact that we're supposed to remind ourselves of Einod Milvado, of the fact that Hashem is the one who created the world, who runs the world, who does everything for us, but also in Kriya Shema we are reminded of the Aseres HaDibros. And this is a Yerushalmi. Let's just read the first couple. The Yerushalmi says, every day when I say Hashem Elokeinu, what am I supposed to have in mind, Hashem Elokeinu? That's a reference to Anochi Hashem Elokecha in the Aseres HaDibros. When I say Hashem Echad, when I say that Hashem is singular, Hashem is unique, Hashem is different, what I have a reference to there is also in the Aseres HaDibros, Lo Yielecha Elokim Acherim Alpana. You have to only focus your attention on God Himself and nobody else. Then when you say ve'ahavta, that's a reference to lo sisa shem Hashem Elokecha lashav. If you love something enough, if you cherish it enough, you will make sure not to talk about it in vain. You're not going to talk vulgar about that item. You're going to treat it with sanctity. You're going to treat it with dignity. You're not just going to go around speaking about it with profanity. Uvapasik, and when we say uchsavta ma'amazuzos be'secha, that is a reference to lo sachmo, that it means I should worry about my house, I shouldn't be jealous of your house, I should worry about my own property, I shouldn't be worried about your property. Over here, you keep reading in the Yerushalmi, but basically what we're told is that every one of the Aseres HaDibros is somehow referenced in the Kriya Shema that we recite every day, which shows, once again, that not only is Kriya Shema a very important element of Torah, but the Aseres HaDibros certainly are an extremely, extremely important thing that we should remind ourselves of all the time. In fact, the Medrash writes, if you look at number Beis, the Medrash tells us, V'chein atamotze, if you'll count, and I challenge everyone to do it because the count is not correct, V'chein atamotze tariag osios, you will find 613 letters, which is not really true, Yesh min anochi ad asher l'reyecha. If you count through the Aseres HaDibros, you will find, says the Medrash, 613 letters from the beginning of Anochi Hashem Elokecha until the last word, V'chal asher l'reyecha. Now, we're not going to take the time to do it now, but the Medrash here tells us it's not really true because really there are 620 letters, not 613. So what do you do with the 7 extra? What? You subtract. But what do you do? What do you say? You're correct. Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Some say it's Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. The Medrash says, Zayin Yiseros, I did the count and really it's not 613, it's 620. So what do I do? How come there are 7 more? Says the Medrash, Keneged Zayin Yimei Bereishis. What does Shivas Yimei Bereishis have anything to do with the Aseres HaDibros? What does it have to do with Kol HaTorah Kula? So the Medrash says, "Lelamedcha, it comes to teach you, shakal ha'olam lo nivra ela b'schus ha'Torah. The reason why the world was created is because we are going to be given a Torah and we are going to follow and observe everything that's written in that Torah. And therefore, when you look through the Aseres HaDibros, you will find that there are 613 letters in the Aseres HaDibros, which is supposed to remind us of the fact that this is really the outline of the entirety of the Torah. But not only that, there are seven more to show us that seven is the fundamental underpinnings of the whole world itself. This is why the world was created, because we are going to have a Torah, we're going to observe all the mitzvahs. This is a very important thing. There are others who say maybe the seven extra are a reference to the seven dinim derabbanan that the Gemara discusses, like netilas yadayim, like a couple of things that the Gemara has, eruv, a couple of things that the Gemara describes as being mitzvahs midrabbanan in the times of the Gemara. So maybe you have 613 plus the seven midrabbanan. That's really the entirety of the Torah that we observe. Okay, whatever it is, basically what you see is that this is a very important part of our religion, and perhaps it's an outline for the entirety of the Torah. And because of that, the Mishnah...
Aren't the seven then duplicates? Because seven includes, like, not killing or...
Right. So, Shavu'ot Mitzvot B'nei Noach, you mean?
Yeah,
so if you say Shavu'ot Mitzvot B'nei Noach, which some do suggest, that's going to be a little problematic because there is some repetition. Now again, we don't keep the Shavu'ot Mitzvot B'nei Noach because it was told to the B'nei Noach. We keep it because the Torah tells us to keep it. So again, there are rules for us, there are rules for the B'nei Noach. So perhaps, maybe that's why it's not a repetition. It's an interesting question, but I think there are very different rules. Even when we're told certain things in the Shavu'ot Mitzvot B'nei Noach and then they are repeated in the Torah itself, the rules are not exactly the same. The punishment is not exactly the same either for a Ben Noach who violates one of his mitzvahs and a Jew who violates one of our mitzvahs. So this is just an interesting concept, not for right now to discuss all the differences, but there are major differences between the rules that govern the Shavu'ot Mitzvot B'nei Noach and the rules that govern all the Tariq Mitzvot HaTorah. But because we assume that this is a highly fundamental part, aspect, of everything that we believe in, this is why in the Beis HaMikdash we're told that every day they used to recite the Aseres HaDibros as part of the Tefillah. Every day they used to incorporate it into the Tefillah, because the same way, let's say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we know is very important. So we need to make sure to remind ourselves of it, to say it every morning, every evening. And therefore, in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to recite Aseres HaDibros also, the same way you recite Shema Yisrael, they used to recite Aseres HaDibros. Well, what's the obvious question? Why don't we do it? If in the Beis HaMikdash they thought that this was so important, shouldn't we be doing the same? So let's look at a Gemara together in Brachos Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, where the Gemara first starts with a description of what took place in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, what their tefillah used to look like. Says the Gemara as follows. Vikorin, number Gimel, Vikorin Aseres HaDibros, every day in the davening, the Gemara here is giving a description of how they used to daven in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash proper. V'koran Aseres HaDibros, they used to say the Aseres HaDibros. Shema, as we know, V'hayam Shamoa, V'yomer, Emes V'yatziv, V'avoda. They used to say Ritzei. Now obviously, Ritzei then had a lot of meaning. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu Be'amcha Yisrael V'svilasam. We want you to accept all the karbanos that we just offered in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, they didn't say the end of the sentence, because they had a Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so that's just clear. But they did offer a prayer that Hashem should accept all of the karbanos that they were offering in the Beis HaMikdash. Ubirchus Kohanim. They had so many Kohanim roaming around the Beis HaMikdash in the time, so they used to say Ubirchus Kohanim. Very nice. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. If this is such a nice practice to recite Aseres HaDibros every day in the davening, they wanted to institute it also in the shuls outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It makes a lot of sense. You want to remind yourself every day of all the very important elements of the Torah, so you should say the Aseres HaDibros, even in our shuls. However, Ela Shekvar Batlu Mipnei Tarumas Aminim. What does that mean? Meaning they thought it was a good idea, but then they said, hey, there's something that might go wrong if we're going to say the Aseres HaDibros in our general shuls outside the Beis HaMikdash. What's the problem? We have apikursim around, tarumas aminim. We have people who don't believe in the authenticity of the Torah. So therefore, what's going to happen? So Rashi explains as follows. Let's look at Rashi, where it says, Pirush Rashi, one line down. Rashi says in the bold, Kedei shelo yomru haminim la'ame ha'aretz. Well, what's going to happen? You have people in your shul who are just naive people, who don't know a lot, ame ha'aretz, and they'll believe anything that people tell them. We all know. There are people like that in every community. So the problem is as follows. You're going to have these apikursim who don't believe in the authenticity of the Torah, who are going to pull to the side these naive people in the shul. And what are they going to sell them? They're going to say the following. She'ein shahar Torah emes. They're going to convince these naive people in your community that the rest of the Torah is not authentic. How do you know? V'sheha holchacha l'kach. How are they going to prove it to these individuals in your shul? She'harei an ein korim b'chol yom ela aseres hadibros. Look, what do you do in your shul every day? All that you choose to take out, to extract from the Torah, to recite in your tefillah every day is aseres hadibros. It must be that's the only part that's really authentic. Because that's the only part that was said at Har Sinai. That's the only part that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of all of us. But the rest of the Torah, you don't have to keep that. And because we have a concern that maybe somebody in the shul is going to convince somebody else of this reality, therefore we decide we're not going to recite the Aseres Hadibros. Take it out of the davening. Even though it was so fundamental, it's so important, and this is why they did it in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Gvulin, outside the Beis HaMikdash, we decided it's not worth the risk. It's not worth the risk. Which is a very interesting kind of idea. That because of that, because we're willing, because we're so concerned that maybe one person, how many people in your shul do you think would fall for such a thing? Because one person might fall for that, because we have Tarumas Aminim, because we have a concern, there are those who deny the authenticity of the Torah and are going to use this as an opportunity to prove their belief, therefore we are going to scrape it out of the davening, we're not going to say it at all. Very interesting. Based on this, the Rashba, Rav Shlomo ben Aderes, who was one of the Rishonim in the 1200s to the early 1300s, the Rashba was asked the same thing. And you look at number Dalid, Mahu lomar aseres hadibros b'shachar b'beis haknesses. Somebody asked the Rashba a question. Can we reinstitute this idea of reciting the aseres hadibros in our shuls? It's a very important thing to say. It's a very important thing to remind ourselves of. Maybe we should do it every day in the davening. There are those, there was a rabbi who sent a shayla to the Rashba, and he asked him, there are some people in my community who feel it's a good idea, what do you think? And the Rashba answers him back, I didn't write the whole thing, but here, Aser lasos kein. One is not allowed to reinstitute this in the shul. Why? Mipnei, because we learn in the Gemara, Shekvar bitlua mipnei tarumas aminim. Because we have this consideration, that someone is going to go astray if we are going to adopt this custom of reciting the Aseres Hadibros. Now you'll say, what's the big deal? If I'm keeping all the Torah anyway, if I'm keeping all the mitzvahs anyway, so what? I don't believe it was from Sinai. I do believe it was from Sinai. Why is it so consequential? So somebody's going to come over to me and say, it's not authentic. Big deal. I'm a God-fearing Jew anyway. I listen to everything my parents did, my grandparents did, so what does it matter? If I don't believe that a pasuk in Chumash is really authentic, who cares if I do it anyway? Well, says the Rambam, then we'll get to your question. The Rambam writes as follows. I forgot to put it on here, but listen to the Rambam. V'zeh davar kasha ad miod. This is a very, very central theme that a person always has to remind themselves of. Sheha omer, because somebody who daringly says, ein Torah min ha-shamayim, someone who says that the Torah is not authentic and it does not stem from God himself, ein lo chelek le'olam haba. And the Rambam is quoting a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi, where the Gemara tells us, this is one of the people that loses their share in Olam Haba if you deny the authenticity of the Torah. So you'll say, well, I believe in most things. I don't have to believe in everything. Says the Rambam, the Ein Hevdel, there is no difference. Bein mi shemakhish es haTorah bechlala, there's no difference to somebody who says the entire Torah is not authentic. Levein hamakhish pasuk echad min haTorah. To somebody who gets up and says, one pasuk in the Torah is not relevant. One part of the Torah doesn't speak to me. One part of the Torah I don't believe was really given to Sinai. And this is a problem that we face so much today. And that's why I'm speaking out this Rambam. We have many halachas in the Torah which we don't understand but we keep anyway. We have some halachas in the Torah which are so countercultural and we say, it just cannot be. It doesn't make sense. How could the Torah say that a homosexual is considered a toeva? How is that possible? Now the Torah is not pointing fingers at the homosexual and saying, you are a bad person. The Torah is saying, yes, you have an urge, and if you act upon those urges, the same way if you're a Mechalel Shabbos, you're considered somebody who's violating the laws of the Torah. Well, even though it's countercultural for us to say that there are limits, that's what the Torah says. And says the Rambam, if a person denies the authenticity, not of the entire Torah, but even of one pasuk, and you say that it's not relevant to you, and you say that it's not authentic and it has nothing to do with your situation and your life, that is already a person who loses their share in Olam Haba. Something to take very seriously. Something to take very seriously, and as difficult as it is for us to fight all of the culture that we live in, it's an important thing to think about. That the authenticity of the Torah is something which we will never compromise. And if a person feels that it is compromised, they are willing to give up their chelek and Olam Haba, which I don't feel is worth it. I don't know. Yeah. under most circumstances. That Mishnah of Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba is the Mishnah in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi. Right after that, the Mishnah says, Ve'elu, this is the part you don't know, She'ein Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba, and this is one of them. So that's a qualifying statement of Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba. The Mishnah gives a whole list. The Mishnah gives a whole list, and this is one of the people on the list. Someone who denies the authenticity of the Torah is one of those people who's not included in the rule of Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Okay, yeah.
But based on that logic, then why do we say in Karbonot the Shlosha Sfeim Mitzvot?
Yeah.
Sorry, Midrash and Bahamut, but you can use the same logic also.
I didn't understand that. What?
You know, if you're not making these statements, so you don't say Asarat HaDibrot because maybe Amin will get mixed up, and then so why make the other list? Why make any statements?
Shloshes remido shatar and adreshes b'am just reminds us of the rules of how one is supposed to learn Torah. I don't think that's really your question.
No.
Your question should have been, let's say, why do we recite Shema Yisrael every day? Isn't that a concern? Right? So that's what you're asking. Shloshes remidos might not be the perfect example, but your question is a good one. So I think the answer is because there's already room to deny the authenticity of Torah because only the Aseres HaDibros, some believe, were given at Har Sinai. Well, if we're going to go ahead and take a step toward that direction and say, yes, in fact, this is the only part that was given at Sinai, and that's why we highlight it in our davening, well, then maybe there's room to argue that the rest of the Torah is not authentic. Shema Yisrael, which is just a regular part of the Torah, Shema Yisrael, which was not, you know, part of the Aseres HaDibros, Shema Yisrael, I don't think people would have that issue. Well, based on this Gemara that we said in Brachos Daf Yud Beis, based on this Rashba that we saw in the 1200s, the Tur, who is Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, the son of the Rush, the Tur was living in the 1270s to the mid-1300s, came right after the Rashba, so the Tur writes a very shocking statement. Says the Tur number 5, Vitov Lomar, it is a good thing for everyone to say every morning, number 1, Parshas HaAkedah, why is that? To remind ourselves of the Mesiras Nefesh of Avraham Avinu, to remind ourselves of how much he was willing to sacrifice because of his love, because of his burning desire to make God happy. Number 2, Parshas Haman, why should we recite Parshas Haman every day? Because the Beis Yosef explains that's to remind us of the fact that God sustains us and takes care of us and gives us the Parnassa. It's not in our own hands. And the same way in the Midbar, the same way in the desert, one never knew when their next meal was going to come. One had to rely solely on the blessings of God from heaven. Well, so too nowadays, we have to always remind ourselves that Parnassa is not a given. It doesn't matter what kind of job you have. It doesn't matter what kind of position you have. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. Parnassa is not a given. God is the one who's going to provide you, and God is the one who can take it all away from you. So that's why it's important to recite Parshas Haman, to remind ourselves of that concept. And number 3, he says, shockingly, Aseres HaDibros, says the Tur, it's a good thing to say Aseres HaDibros every day, along with Parshas Haman, along with the Parshas HaAkedah. So how do you explain this? The Beis Yosef asks, how can you say such a thing? Don't you know the Gemara says you're not allowed to recite it? And don't you know that the Gemara tells us that we have a consideration that maybe there's going to be Tarumas Amina, maybe someone's going to be led to deny the authenticity of Torah if you're going to recite the Aseres HaDibros? So how can the Torah say it's a good thing to recite every day? The Beis Yosef answers as follows. Says the Beis Yosef, well, there's a difference between somebody reciting it on their own and somebody reciting it in the context of a tzibur. The Gemara is describing us whether we should institute it in our davening in shul. Should everyone do it together? Well, you look in the back of an art school sitter, they have a couple of things after davening every day. What do they have? I believe, you'll check, I think they have animamins, and they have the Yud Gimel Ikari Hamuna of the Rambam, and they have a whole bunch of different things which are very nice things to remind ourselves of, and they also have the Aseres HaDibros, which over there, if a person's saying it on their own, there's nothing to be concerned about that maybe someone's going to come and convince you that there's a lack of authenticity of Torah. Says the Beis Yosef, maybe that's why the Tur writes, it's a nice thing to say on your own. But again, to reinstitute it, that we should say it together in shul, that you still have to be bound by the consideration that the Gemara presents for us. How do we paskin lahalacha? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Tov lomar Aseres HaDibros b'chol yom. The Shulchan Aruch says, it's a good thing to say the Aseres HaDibros every day. And the Rama stops him right away. He says, hey, you missed the most important part of the statement, and that is only when it's biyachid, but not when it's bitzibur, not when we're all together collectively davening. That's not something that should be done. Yeah. Okay. Okay, that wasn't our question. What?
The Parshat Haman, you say privately. The Parshat Haman, you say privately, but Parshat Haman,
But there's no problem with saying that. The only question that we have on the tour is, how can you say Aseres HaDibros? So the answer is, Aseres HaDibros, he didn't mean to lump together with everything else. He just says a person should do it on their own. And that's what the Ramah says. How come in the Shulchan Aruch, he leaves out the most important part of the statement? Now this is just a general question for anyone who's ever learned Shulchan Aruch inside. It's very interesting. The Shulchan Aruch was made to be a compendium of halachos that one can quickly run through. Now we have so many commentaries that have commentaries upon commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, it takes forever to go through it. But originally, the Shulchan Aruch writes in his Hakdama, in the introduction, he writes that what his plan was to write a book that will be reviewed once a month. Because every day he split it up based on the day, how much a person should read every day in order that they should finish it once a month. In fact, Ari Bergman, who gives a shiur here on Monday evenings, has in his house an original copy of the Shulchan Aruch where they even have the dates written in. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, Aleph Nisan, you should be doing this. Beis Nisan, you should be doing that. And he split up the Shulchan Aruch itself based on days in the month to tell us that really that's supposed to be what we should be doing every day. We should be reviewing the Shulchan Aruch. Now the problem is, because he wanted to do a shortened version that would be quick enough to read through once a month, he didn't write everything that he wrote in his Beis Yosef, which was the earlier commentary that he based everything off of. So that's a major question. Sometimes when he leaves out a point from the Beis Yosef that he originally wrote, and now in the Shulchan Aruch he just shortens it and he doesn't write that point that he originally had, does that mean to say that he disagrees with the original writing? Or does it just mean that he wanted to cut down the writing so he couldn't put everything in, so he left out some details, and he means to say, if you want all the details, go look back at my first book that I wrote, the Beis Yosef. So that's an interesting question that comes up over here as well. In the Beis Yosef, he writes that you're only allowed to do it by yourself and not Bitzibur. Then in the Shulchan Aruch, he just leaves it blank. He says, well, you're allowed to say Aseres HaDibros every day in your davening. So what do you mean? How come you left out the most important part of the statement? So you can say either he disagrees with the original ruling that he made, and he retracted, and that's why the later book that he wrote is obviously going to be the halacha. Or do you say that he just means to say, if you want all the details, go back to my first sefer, because I assume that you know how to find that, and you look up everything over there. So that's an important point. But either way, the Ramah qualifies the statement for us, and he says it's not appropriate to recite this in public because we're concerned, again, of Tarumas Aminim. There's a very similar Gemara that we find, a concept which is not exactly the same, but a similar concept. The Gemara tells us in Erev and Daf Samach Dalet, an interesting story that's told there, about two Amoraim who were having a discussion about a certain halachic topic. And the Gemara says that one of them said the halacha is like this, one of them said the halacha is like that. And the other one was so enlightened by his friend who had an opinion on the matter, and he said, Yafa Darashta. That's a beautiful idea. It's a beautiful concept that you said. And I like that idea. I like that proposal that you're making for this halachic quandary that we have now. And the Gemara says, how are you allowed to say such a thing? I Ha'omer Shmuazu Na Ushmuazu Eino Na Me'abed Hona Shel Torah. You're never allowed to say, let's say you really enjoy the Tuesday morning shir. So you're going to go home and you're going to say, I love that shir. It's great. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to say that. Why? Because the implication is that the Wednesday morning shir, I don't know who gives it, but whatever, that all the rest of the shirim that you go to are not so great. So what does that show? It shows, well, this part of Torah really excites me, but that part of Torah, you're not talking about the speaker, you're talking about the Torah, because what I'm saying is not me, it's the Torah speaking. So you're going to say, well, I really enjoyed that part of Torah that he discussed today. Well, that shows that obviously the thing that we discussed last week was not so interesting to you. Isn't that giving a little bit of a knock to a certain part of Torah? Well, says the Gemara, therefore, you should never say Shmuazu Na. A person should never say, this part of Torah really speaks to me. That part of Torah was really interesting, really exciting. Because the implication is that the rest of the Torah is not relevant, not exciting, not interesting to you. That's what the Gemara tells us. In fact, the Shalah writes a very fascinating comment. The Shalah has, if you've ever been on a Pesach program, on a whatever, so they sell the aliyahs, right? So it's a skill to sell aliyahs well. So what do? So Kohen is always Kohen, and Levi is always Levi. But Shlishi, you say, oh, $1,000 Shlishi. Aye, Revi, not so exciting. So what's going to be with Revi? So they say, okay, $100 Revi. Then a Chamishi, you get, oh, Aseres HaDibros, great. Aseres HaDibros is a skula. If you buy the Aseres HaDibros, it's a skula for this skula, a special aliyah. Oh, we're going to start at $1,500. What are you trying to say? That the aliyah of the Aseres HaDibros is more prominent than the simple Revi that you just tried to raffle off for $100, correct? No? You find that all the time. This is what we hear. This is what people say. Says the Shalah, it's an inappropriate way to talk. All the aliyahs are equal. What does it matter if you have the Aseres HaDibros, if you have this, if you have that? Bottom line, all of the aliyahs are equal. All of the Torah is authentic. All of it is important. All of it is critical for us to understand how we're supposed to be living. So how can a person dare to get up and say, oh, well, this aliyah is worth a lot more than the other one, and therefore we should start the bidding at $1,500 instead of $100 for the other aliyah? That, says the Shalah, is something That is not right. Which, it's, you know, if you look carefully in Parshas Korach, so for those who learn Chumash with Rashi, which I would suggest is a good thing to do, nowadays that we have English Chumash with English Rashi, it's very easy to do. So you look in the beginning of Parshas Korach, where Rashi tells us that Parshazu Yafa Nidreshes. This Parsha is very nicely learned out. So the Mefarshim on Rashi ask, how can Rashi say such a thing? That means to say that every other Parsha is not so nice. So how is Rashi let us say in the beginning of Parshas Korach, Parshazu Yafa Nidreshes, isn't that violating the principle that the Gemara says, he can't say this Parsha is better than the other one? So some suggest what Rashi means is that you look at the story of Korach and you're wondering, is this guy crazy? How could it be? What's he arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu? Don't you know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who split the Yamsut? Don't you know Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who performed all the miracles? What are you doing? You think you're going to win? It just doesn't make sense. So Rashi's saying, yes, if you're like me and you have a difficult time understanding the simple understanding of the story, just doesn't make any sense to us, so you should look in the Medrash and Parshazu Yafa Nidreshes. You look in the Medrash and you'll have a great understanding because the Medrash fills in all the details that the Psukim themselves don't fill us in on. That's maybe what Rashi means. Parshas Uyafan Adreshas, he doesn't mean to say this is more exciting than anything else. He just means, if you want to understand the story, you should look in the Medrash, and there you will have a great understanding as to what the Psukim mean. However, they say in the name of the Prima Gadam, I have a hard time believing that the Prima Gadam ever would say such a thing, but they say in his name, I don't think it's Semes, but it's cute anyway, he says that maybe the understanding of Rashi is the following. When you have a shul rabbi, and he gets up to give a drasha on Shabbos, so is it right when it's Parshas Yisro, he's going to get up and give a drasha about Parshas Tazria? People aren't expecting that. They want to hear a message from this week's Parsha. They don't want to hear a message from last week's Parsha or next week's Parsha. They want to hear what you have to say, a perspective on what's happening right now. However, Rashi tells us, any Shabbos that a rabbi wants to get up and give a drasha about Parshas Korach, Parshazu Yafa Nidreshes, it's always a good time. Why? Because Korach is about Machlokas, and Machlokas is always a relevant topic to speak about. So Rashi means to tell us, Parshazu Yafa Nidreshes, this is always a good thing to say. It doesn't matter what Parsha you're up to, doesn't matter what juncture in the year you're up to. Parshas Korach is always a good thing to talk about, and you can never lose by mentioning the importance of having shalom, of not having machlokas. Okay, it's obviously not what Rashi really means to say, but it's a nice insight anyway. Yeah. Well, the reason Shishi is revered is because Shlishi became revered. You know that? What happened was, everyone said, well, Shlishi is the best Aliyah. Why is Shlishi the best Aliyah? Because a Kohen is Kohen. So if I'm not a Kohen, I can't get the Aliyah. Levi is Levi. If I'm not a Levi, I can't get it. The first best Aliyah that all of us can get equally is Shlishi. So let's look, who's the Gabbai going to point out? Oh, who's the most special in the room? Who are we going to choose? For the first Aliyah that we can choose anyone, that's why Shlishi became special. Everybody realized that that was going to be a problem. Why are we highlighting Shlishi over any other Aliyah? So the Chassidish Rebbe said, no, we want to show that the other Aliyahs are also special. So they highlighted Shishi. Just arbitrarily, they picked Shishi to show that Shishi is the same as Shlishi. And now because of that, all the Chassidim are fighting to get Shishi because that's the Rebbe's Aliyah, but the whole thing's a mistake in the first place. So your question's a good one, but the if you know the history of how it evolved, it's interesting that that's the reason why it evolved is to get out of this problem. Now it turned into a problem in itself. So there's a lot of discussion in the Achronim about what exactly we're allowed to have in a shul. The Achronim discussed, let's say, you know, you have a lot of, in many shuls, you have on the parochas, you have lions or you have tigers and you have all sorts of different animals. And the Achronim discussed whether or not that's a proper thing to have in a shul or whether it's inappropriate. You have sometimes in a shul pictures of Rabbanim. I was once in a shul where they have a huge life-size picture of Moshe Feinstein going across the whole wall of the shul. It's a beautiful thing. But the question is that permissible? The simple, you know, I once went with my father to Einstein, Olav HaShalom. It used to be YU's school, now it's no longer. So when we were there for Shabbos, so I remember they davened in a certain room. It could be the shul was under construction, or maybe this is the shul that they davened in every year. I think I was 10 years old, so it was a while ago. But basically, we went there, and they have a huge, since it's called Einstein, for anybody who knows who that was, so they have a huge wall with a mural on the wall of Einstein, and that happened to be the Mizrach. So that's where everyone was davening, toward this picture of Einstein. And the question is that appropriate? Now, we all know we're not bowing down to Einstein. It was just it happened to be. That was the room we were using, and that's where we were. But really, it's not appropriate. And there's two reasons that are given. Number one, simply because you're going to be so taken by the mural, you're going to be so taken by all the artistry, by the beautiful work that was done, you're not going to focus, you're not going to pay attention to all the kavanas and tefillah that you're supposed to have. So that's reason number one. Well, if that's the case, well, then it's questionable, how do you have any of these things? Because all of this is beautiful, or not, whatever. So all of it is very nice, so you're going to have your attention not focused on your sitter, you're going to be focusing on the beautiful artistry in the front of the shul. But the second reason that's given is because it looks like we're bowing down to the outsider, it looks like we're bowing down to Einstein. It looks like we're bowing down to Rav Moshe Feinstein. So maybe that's something that we shouldn't do because it doesn't look good. It looks like, to the outsider's perspective, it looks like we're doing something that is inappropriate, which led to another question, which I thought was, I don't know, trivial. But basically, if you ever look at some Sfardi Sidurim, so they have some Sidurim, have Rav Kaduri on the cover, or they have this, so you'll say, well, what's the problem on the cover? What's wrong with that? So Rav Avadia Yosef's son writes in his Sefer, a very fascinating point. He says, well, what's the big deal? When you open the Siddur, so the Siddur's open. So you're not looking at the front of the cover. I'm not bowing down to Rav Kaduri. What's the problem? But he says, the problem is sometimes when people have so much kavanah, they close the sitter and they close their eyes and they go like this. And they're shuckling in front of a closed sitter. So what are they shuckling at the picture on the front of the sitter? Okay, so I don't know if you have to take it that far. But this is an interesting discussion that the Achronim have about what's appropriate to have in a shul and what perhaps is not appropriate. The Magen Avraham writes, in Siman Aleph, the very first Siman in Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham points out that it's inappropriate in a shul to hang a poster board that has the Aseres Hadibros written on them. Why? Says the Magen Avraham, the same way the Gemara tells us that Aseres Hadibros should not be recited in public, well, so too, you shouldn't hang up a big poster in the shul that has the Aseres Hadibros on it, because that's going to lead people maybe to say that that's the only authentic part of a shul. Now, have any of us ever been in a shul that maybe has the Aseres Hadibros on the Aron Kodesh? On top of the urn or on the parochas, nobody's ever seen that. We all have it in our shuls. It's all over the place. It's very prevalent. So how do you explain if the Magen Avraham tells us that we extend the Gemara and say not only should we not recite the Aseres Hadibros in the middle of our davening, but we also shouldn't have it hanging in our shul. So how do we have it hanging on the Aron Kodesh? Isn't that a fair question? So the Reish Rav writes in one of his Svarim, I didn't put it on here, but listen carefully. He says, V'lo emna lahatzik po madat mi'ali k'tzas. I won't stop myself from asking something which bothers me. I've seen something in many shuls that I've visited, which is troubling to me. Around the Aron Kodesh, often they have beautiful tapestry, or they have some artwork, or some woodwork, or whatever it might be. And on top of all that beautiful artistry is Shnei Luchas Habris. On top of that, they affix a replica of the luchos. Now, were the luchos really round? Were they square? Were they this? Were they that? Doesn't matter. But we know that that's really supposed to be what we believe is a replica of the luchos. Uvesocham hatevos ha-reishio shakol echad me'aseres hadibros. And inside of that, we have Anochi Hashem lo yia. We have the first couple of words of each of the aseres hadibros. Ve'eich asu kein. And he says, how did they do such a thing? How can you build a shul like that? Ve'lo chashu bazeh l'tarumas aminim. Don't we know, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to recite the Aseres Hadibros in the context of your davening because we're afraid of Tarumas Aminim. Umadua Yeshuna, why should this be any different? Doesn't the Magen Avraham say, you're not allowed to have the Aseres Hadibros hanging on a poster in the shul? Well then, why are we allowed to have it hanging on top of the Aron Kodesh? Why is that permissible? So he goes on to say that he's not sure exactly why it is. But then he writes, Va'achare asher ruba deruba shabbatei knesios nivnu tachas hagachas gedoli Yisrael midor shelefanenu. You have to assume that there were great rabbanim who davened in many of the shuls that we see. It's not that they were all built by people who didn't know anything, who didn't know the halacha. They were built by people who did know. Asher haya darkam lehischakos ha'kol prad misidri habinin. The rabbi was always involved in the blueprint of the shul and how it was going to be built and all the details of the design. It's not that everything just came by itself. From the fact that all the rabbis let it go and nobody ever made a problem, it must be that this is not something we have to be concerned about. Vitzarachi and Ladina, he says, I'm not sure why. I think the question is better than the answer, he says, and I don't know why it is that we're justified in putting the luchos on top of the Aron Kodesh or on the parochas if the Magen Avraham tells us that it's highly inappropriate to have the Aseres Hadibros highlighted in our shuls the same way we don't make it highlighted in our davening every day in shul. There are those who want to suggest that maybe the difference is, well, where do we generally put it? We don't have it hanging all over the walls. The Magen Avraham says you shouldn't have it on a poster board hanging on the wall. But by us, we put it on top of the Aron Kodesh or on the Parochas. What is behind that? What's on top of that? It's the Sefer Torah. The Aron Kodesh is what's housing the Sefer Torah. So what are you going to be concerned? Someone's going to walk into the shul and say, oh, the Aseres Hadibros are the only authentic part of the Torah. What do you mean? Look at where they're situated. look that they're sitting on the Aron Kodesh, and it must be that that's just a highlight of everything that's inside of this Aron Kodesh, which is the entirety of the Torah. Okay, interesting suggestion, but the question is probably a little bit better than the answer that's suggested. So if anyone has any ideas, I'm open to suggestions. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Gimel, how do we know that you have to stand up for a Sefer Torah while it's in motion? How do you know that you have to stand up for a Sefer Torah while it's moving? Now, important to note is, when a Sefer Torah is in the Aron Kodesh, sitting in the Aron Kodesh, or you have a Sefer Torah on the Bima, and it's stationary, it's not in motion, there is no obligation to stand up, which is very relevant for the Yom Naram. When we keep opening and closing the Aron Kodesh, everybody always stands up when you open the Aron Kodesh. Now, that's just out of extra respect, but strictly speaking, one does not have to stand up. And again, on Yom Kippur, if a person is tired, if a person is thirsty, if a person is hungry, which probably they are, and it's not so easy for them to keep standing up and sitting down and standing up and sitting down, we assume that really you would not have an obligation to stand up while the Aron Kodesh is open again, because the Sefer Torah at that point is stationary. The only time we have an obligation to stand is while the Sefer Torah is in motion. Says the Gemara, how do we know that one is to stand up for a Sefer Torah? So the Gemara says very simply, well, we all know that we have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham because it says, Mipnei Seva Takum. Seva doesn't mean an old person. Seva means Zesh HaKana Chachma. Right? The Vahadarta Pnei Zakin. You have to stand up for somebody who's a Zakin. Zesh HaKana Chachma. Somebody who is a Talmud Chacham, doesn't matter how old or young they are. So the Gemara tells us that if you have to stand up in Pnei Lom Deha, if you have to stand up for the person that learns the Torah, that embodies all the values of the Torah, then obviously you have to stand up for the Torah itself. That's the real McCoy. So the Gemara says we learn it from a Kal V'chomer from a Talmud Chacham. If you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, then certainly you can backtrack and you have to stand up for a Sefer Torah itself. And there's a discussion whether you have to stand up for a Pasul of Sefer Torah as well. As we know on Simchas Torah, we dance around with even Sefer Torah that might have a Psul in it. That's a discussion that the Poskim have. The Ramah even has a discussion whether I have to stand up for a Chumash as well. Even not a Sefer Torah, do I have to stand up for a Chumash? And we know the Minig is not that way. We only stand up for a Sefer Torah itself, not for a Chumash. There is an interesting Shaila that was raised, and that is on Simchas Torah one year. It's an unfortunate question, but one year on Simchas Torah, there was a great Talmud Chacham. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I think that's who it was said about, that he was dancing with a Sefer Torah, and he tripped, and he fell down with the Sefer Torah in his hands. And the Shaila was raised, who should we pick up first? Should we pick up the Talmud Chacham who embodies the Sefer Torah plus more? Right, because the Talmud Chacham learned all the Torah and now knows more than the Torah is written itself. Or should he pick up the Sefer Torah first because the Sefer Torah is the Sefer Torah? How can you allow that to sit in the floor? And there's a lot of literature about this question, which is a fascinating one in my opinion. Who should he pick up first? And meanwhile, both of them were lying on the floor, the Sefer Torah and Rav Shlomo Zalman, while everyone was arguing. So that was certainly the wrong thing to do. What? You should pick them up at the same time. You know, you remind me when my father told me that Rav Avadya Yosef came once to YU to visit. And Rav Soloveitchik was there, and he had honored Rav Avadya to give a shiur in the Beis Medrash. And the problem was, when they walked into the Beis Medrash, who's going to walk in first? So each one was standing by the door, and each one was saying, well, you're Rav Soloveitchik, you should walk in first. And no, you're Rav Avadya Yosef, you should walk in first. Each one was going, saying to the other one. So finally, one Talmud comes along, he says, there are two doors, you can both walk in at the same time. So that's what they ended up doing. I was once in Eretz Yisrael with my father and Rav Asher Weiss, and we all had to go somewhere, so we were getting in a taxi. So both my father and Rav Asher Weiss went to the front seat of the car, and they both opened the door for the other one. My father said, no, you should go into the front. And he said, no, you should go into the front. Finally, they couldn't come to an agreement, so they said, well, there's one person in the group here that certainly does not belong in the front, so I guess he should go there, we'll both sit in the back. So there are all sorts of different options you can come up with when you have these kind of dilemmas. But whatever it is, we're told that you have to stand up for a Sefer Torah while it's in motion. Now the Mishnah Berurah writes, which is an important halacha to note, that when the obligation to stand up for a Sefer Torah, says the Mishnah Berurah, smicha ki yeshiva dami le'inyan zeh. If a person is going to lean like this, while you're supposed to be standing for a Sefer Torah, says the Mishnah Berurah, smicha is ki yeshiva. And often we do that. We lean on a chair, or we lean on a shtender, we lean on a table, something. We don't stand up fully in an erect position when the Sefer Torah is being carried. And the Mishnah Berurah writes in Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah in Kuf Mem Vav, that smicha is ki yeshiva dami. If a person leans, he may as well be sitting, because leaning does not help. You have to show your utmost respect. Obviously, if a person is not able to stand up straight, so you can't stand up straight, what can he do? But if a person is able to stand up straight, they're just being lazy, so that is something that we would consider to be smicha ki yeshiva dami. Yes?
I don't get the moving part. I mean, it's the person
What do you mean?
Well, Sefer Torah, and so it's up.
While it's in motion.
While it's in motion. But a lot of times, the shul is when they're doing Rosh Chodesh Benching, they just hold it.
Right, so the Shaar HaTzion writes during Rosh Chodesh Benching, you don't really have to stand because the Sefer Torah is not in motion.
But where's the deal?
Oh, where does that come from? The difference between moving and non-moving? So that's discussed. I mean, the question when it's really important is, forget about where does moving and not moving come from, but how do we sit down during Hakafas on Simchas Torah? Simchas Torah, you have Sifrei Torah that are in motion the whole day, and you have people who certainly can't stand. I can't stand. I'm pretty young, and I can't stand the whole Simchas Torah while the Sifrei Torah are moving around. So what's our excuse to sit down while the Sifrei Torah are in motion on Simchas Torah? This is a very serious question. So for women, it's a little bit different because maybe we assume that the Ezras Nashim is a Rishus Bifnei Atzma. Maybe it's considered like a different room, so maybe women might be allowed to sit. But the question is, for somebody who's on the ground floor, for somebody who's sitting on the ground floor itself, or sometimes, let's say here, you have an Ezras Nashim that is not a Rishus Bifnei Atzma. You have an Ezras Nashim here that just has poles and it's movable. And there are women who are going to be here. So what's the heter to sit down during the Hakafos? Is something maybe if you're still around Simchas Torah time, maybe we'll discuss it then. So now you have an incentive to come back.
What was the answer about the Haggadah and the Sefer Torah falling?
It should never happen again. When it does happen, we'll worry about it. But there's.
But if the Sefer Torah fell, it's not in motion anymore.
But it's mutal b'zayin. It's on the floor. Everyone agrees to that.
Right, but the motion part of it.
Okay, but everyone agrees if the Sefer Torah, you know, if you have a Sefer Torah that's sitting on the floor, obviously you should pick it up. So anyway, this is with regard to standing while the Sefer Torah is being carried, while the Sefer Torah is in motion. What about while the Sefer Torah is being read on Shabbos? What about while we're reading the Sefer Torah on the Bima? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuf Mem Aleph, if you are the one reading the Sefer Torah, so one has an obligation to stand up. Why? Because it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was being taught the Torah, Va'ata Po Amodi Madi. He was told, God tells him, come stand with me. What do you mean stand with me? God was teaching him the Torah, God was reading the Torah, and therefore God was standing himself, so to speak. So therefore we learn from there that if a person is the one reading the Torah themselves, they have to stand while they are reading the Torah. However, if the Torah is just being read and you are not the one who's reading it, we assume that there's no obligation to stand. So you do find here and there people stand up anyway, which is just an extra heder, that's just an extra sign of respect. But really, strictly speaking, there is no obligation to stand up while the Torah is being read. The Tashbetz, who was one of the Rishonim, said that this is a mistake. We have an obligation to stand while the Torah is being read. Why? Because we have a pasuk in Sefer Nehemiah, where the pasuk says, Ubepischo, when Ezra Nehemiah opened up the Sefer Torah, Ubepischo, Amdu Kalam, everyone stood up. What does that mean? They weren't all reading. Ezra was the one who was reading, so why'd they all stand up? Says the Tashbetz, is a mistake. It must be that you have an obligation to stand up while the Torah is being read, even if you are not the one who's reading it. That's what the Tashbetz suggests. All the later Achronim point out that this is a major mistake. Because if you look, the Gemara has in Sota Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph that's not the way we're supposed to translate this pasuk. Ubepischo amdu kal ha'am. It doesn't mean when he opened up the Sefer Torah, everybody literally stood up. The Gemara says amdu kal ha'am means everyone was silent. Amida here doesn't mean standing. Amida here means being silent, being still, being stationary, not moving around, not making noise. That's what it means while we're reading the Sefer Torah. So again, we generally assume that there is no real obligation to stand up during the Kriyas HaTorah, unless you are the one reading. But if you are just a participant, if you're just listening, we assume that there's no obligation to stand. However, the Mishnah Berurah writes, even though the minhag is that we don't stand during Kriyas HaTorah, everyone will agree, says the Mishnah Berurah, that while Baruch Hu Es Hashem HaMevorach is being recited, one has to stand up. Why? Because the same way we stand up during Shemona Esrei, which is a Dvar Mishnah B'Kedusha, the same way we stand up during Kaddish, which is a Dvar Mishnah B'Kedusha, it's considered a more elevated part of davening. The same way we stand up when the chazan says Baruch Hu, so too we should stand up when the person getting the aliyah says Baruch Hu Es Hashem HaMevorach. So that, says the Mishnah Berurah, is something we should think about. That's what he quotes in the name of the Ramah Mipanu. So this is with regard to that. So even though most of us do not stand throughout the year when we recite the Kriyas HaTorah, unless we're the ones reading, however, the question is, why is it that we find when we read, let's say, the Aseres HaDibros, why is it that everybody stands? And is this a practice that is something that we should adopt? Is it something that's proper? Is it something that's improper? So let's see what they have to say about it. So you have the Rambam writes in a tshuva. Let's read the Rambam together on the bottom of the page, where the Rambam tells us as follows. He weighs in on the issue with regard to standing during the Aseres HaDibros. Nishal, I was asked, Odos Masha Hora Chacham Echad, what somebody said, Shekol Ish Asher Yamod Be'ez Kriyas Haseras HaDibros, Ro'oi Lig Or Bo, says the Rambam. Perhaps somebody who stands during Kriyas HaTorah is worthy of being yelled at, says the Rambam. Yelled at? What are you going to yell at the person? What are they doing wrong? Lefisha Maisazu Midarki Haminimhu. Because that is like the Gemara's concern. The same way, says the Rambam, She'omrim, because there are people who say, She'yesh Yisrael na'aseros hadibros al shar parashios haTorah. There are those who think that the aseros hadibros have a more prominent place than the rest of the Torah itself. And the same way the Gemara tells us that one is not allowed to go ahead and say the aseros hadibros in the context of their davening because we're concerned of a mistake coming out of that regarding authenticity of Torah. Well, so do we assume, says the Rambam, one is not allowed to highlight one part of Kriyas HaTorah over any other. And therefore, says the Rambam, one is not allowed to stand up during the recitation of the Aseres HaDibros because that's showing that this part of Torah is more important than any other part of Torah. That's what the Rambam argues. Now, this Rambam is not found in the Rambam's classical work, Yad HaChazaka. This is not found in the Rambam's work where he quotes all the halachas. This is a Rambam in his Tshuva Sefer, which was found in a Geniza. It was found in a... What do you call it? In a... Not a treasury. It was restored recently. We assume that this is a Rambam that was found, so it really is the Rambam. It's a manuscript, but it was found much later on. So that's always a question. What do we do about the fact that for thousands of generations we never heard of such a thing, and all of a sudden we uncover, we dig up a Rambam and a Ksav Yad who tells us that it's an inappropriate practice? So that's a question number one. Rabbi Avadia Yosef talks about this issue in one of his tshuvas, and he says you have to take the Rambam all the way to the bank. Absolutely, anyone who dares to stand up during Aseres HaDibros, if they don't stand throughout the rest of the Kriyas HaTorah, you got to throw them out of shul, they're wrong, they're doing something highly inappropriate, the Rambam's right, and the same way the Gemara tells us you're not allowed to recite the Aseres HaDibros in the middle of davening, so too you're not allowed to stand up, you cannot highlight one part of Torah over any other, and therefore you have no right to stand up during the reading of the Aseres HaDibros. Okay? That's what he suggests. There are others who argue no. The Gemara just tells us that you're not allowed to do it in the context of davening. Why? Because we're concerned of the meaning. Now, nowadays, how many people have you ever met who are really going to make such a mistake? Maybe in the times of Chazal, they had people who were so theological, they had people who were talking about the authenticity of Torah, they were talking about such issues, and maybe they would have taken a sign from the fact that this was recited during the davening, but nowadays, how relevant is it? It's not really relevant. So sometimes when we have issues like that, havu delo lo sefala, which means, what Chazal said is asur, keep it at that. There's no reason to add on extra chumras to something that doesn't really make sense in the first place to us. So we're not going to negate what Chazal said. We're not going to take away what they told us about not reciting it during davening. We'll leave it as is. But there's no reason to add on and say that nowadays we should say that you're not even allowed to stand during the recitation of the Aseres HaDibros at all. This is a argument that was made, and they want to prove it from the following, which is a very interesting proof. The Gemara has in Pesachim Daf Nun Vav Amid Aleph a discussion about Baruch Shem Kivod Malchus Eliyahu Vadi. Ever wonder why do we say Baruch Shem so quietly? What's that all about? Why do we say Baruch Shem with the same tone of voice that we say every other part of the davening? Why do we say Baruch Shem quietly? So you all think it's because it's not on the Torah.
Well, the Baruch Shem is not part of that.
So we say plenty of parts of davening that are not found in the Torah, but we say them out loud. So there are two reasons that are given. Many people know the reason that really Baruch Shem was stolen from... That's one reason. But really it was stolen from when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim to receive the Torah, so he hears how the Malachim are praising Hashem, and they say, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Eliyahu Vad. That's the praise, that's the Shira that the Malachim sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, stole it from them, because he thought it was such a beautiful tefillah, so he stole it from them and came back to this world and gave it to us. Well, we don't want the Malachim to have and a disagreement with Moshe Rabbeinu. You stole our song. What are you doing? How are you allowed to do that? How can you steal it from Shemayim and bring it down to earth? It's not proper. It's not appropriate. So therefore, we whisper it that they shouldn't hear. That's reason number one that's given. And that's why on Yom Kippur, when we are all like quasi malachim, on Yom Kippur went. Thank you. On Yom Kippur, when we are like malachim ourselves, that's why on Yom Kippur we have the license to say Baruch Shem out loud, the same way the malachim say it out loud. Because then there's no problem about the fact that we stole it from them. Because that's a time of year when we are like them. Reason number two, the Gemara says, is because Yaakov Avinu, when he was with his children, he says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is everyone together? And they all say, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Eliyahu Vad. So the Gemara goes on to a whole discussion. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't really say it here out loud. Yaakov Avinu does say it out loud. So what are we going to do? You're going to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu that we shouldn't say it out loud, but you're going to argue with Yaakov Avinu that we shouldn't say it. So what are you going to do? Therefore, the Gemara says, you know what? Say it quietly. Says the Gemara as follows. There came a time in history where they had a concern about the following. Hiskinu, they made a takana, a decree, shehu omrim osa bekolra. There was a point in history when they used to say Baruch Shem out loud every day in the davening. Why? Aye, we just learned that there's a good reason why we say it quietly. Mipnei tarumas haminim. Because they're concerned that people are going to say, hey, you're saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then I'm watching as everyone in shul is mumbling something under their breath. Must be that they're saying, I don't really believe in this God. Right? So the Gemara says, because we're concerned that people are going to walk away from the Kriya Shema experience and say, well, these people aren't really believers in God. They're whispering something under their breath. Right after they accept God's presence in their lives, they're whispering something under their breath. That must be that they don't believe in God. And because we're concerned that somebody is going to have Tarumas Aminim, somebody's going to walk away from the experience in Shul and say, these people aren't really believers. Therefore, they instituted that Baruch Shem must be said out loud. Nobody can make a mistake. It will be clear, obvious to everybody. No mistakes that can be made. Baruch Shem is a part of Kriya Shema. Nobody's mumbling anything under their breath, says the Gemara. But in the communities where that's not a concern, you can do like the old practice. Say it out loud, say it quietly, the same the way you're supposed to do it. So someone approved from there. What you see is that any time where you have something which was instituted because of Tarumas Aminim, because we're concerned maybe someone's going to have the mistaken impression and say that something is not authentic, well, that's only if your community has that consideration. But let's say in our community, no one's going to watch you say Baruch Shem and say, oh, look at him, look at her. It must be that you're not believing in God. No one's going to walk away with that kind of conclusion. So therefore, perhaps in our time, there's really not much to be concerned about. And therefore, we really might not have a reason to add on to that which the Gemara already said is not permissible. So the Gemara tells us again that we should not recite this in shul in the context of our davening. Does that mean we should extrapolate from there and go 10 steps further and say you also shouldn't stand up for the Aliyah of Aseres HaDibros? No. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein argues, that it's not appropriate to extend it that far. It's hard enough to understand the original takana, the original halacha, not really so relevant to us. So therefore, there's no reason to add on to it and say that something more is going to be permissible, is going to be prohibited on top of what the Gemara already said is not permissible. So this is an important point. Let's just close. Rav Asher Weiss once was talking to me about this, and he said, you can prove this from the Yerushalmi in Maseches Megillah Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis. And this is a beautiful proof. It's a great insight. The Yerushalmi tells us, nowadays we have Kriyas HaTorah. Nowadays during Kriyas HaTorah we recite a bracha at the beginning and end of every Aliyah. But in the times of the Gemara, they used to just recite a bracha at the beginning of Kriyas HaTorah. One person made a bracha before, and at the end, one person made a bracha at the end. That's it. There were no brachas in between. They just used to call people up, and that was it. Everyone just came up, read from the Torah, sat down. Nowadays, we know the practice is different. However, in the times of the Gemara, we're told here in the Yerushalmi, Amar le Reb Simon ber Reb Yeshua, b'shem Reb Yeshua ben Levi, ein l'chatan bracha lefanav u'le'acharav, nothing, no part of Kriyas HaTorah needs a bracha before and after the specific aliyah, ela shiras hayam ve'aseres hadibros u'klalo shebetoros kohanim u'klalo shebemishnah Torah. Amar Rabbi Abo, ani lo shamati nirin hadvarim ve'aseres hadibros. What it means is, to paraphrase, every other portion of the Torah, every other Shabbos when you read from the Torah, you're right. There's no reason to recite a bracha before and after your aliyah. But when you're getting up to the Aseres HaDibros, which are so prominent, which are so important, then you got to highlight that, and you have to show everybody, look, pay attention, we're reading the Aseres HaDibros, you have to say a bracha before we start and after we're done. So Rav Asher Weiss pointed out, aye, why aren't they concerned? People are going to walk away and say, what, the Aseres HaDibros is more important than everything else? Look, you're making a bracha, you're highlighting it over everything else, it must be. Okay, we don't really have such a consideration. We don't have such a concern. So therefore, you only leave it as is. You leave it what the Gemara said is not permissible, and that is to say it in public. You leave it at what the Magen Avraham said, not to hang up a big poster in the shul that has the Aseres HaDibros, but to add on more than that, and to extrapolate that we're not even allowed to stand up while we read the Aseres HaDibros on Shabbos either, that's a difficult practice. So that's something that's questionable. There is one way, one very easy way out of this whole issue, and that is what some suggest, that instead of standing up right when they start the Aseres HaDibros, you may as well stand from the beginning of the Aliyah. The Aseres HaDibros is not the start of the Aliyah. So you stand from the beginning of the Aliyah, which shows that you're not only highlighting these psukim of the Aseres HaDibros, you consider the whole Aliyah to be an important Aliyah. All the psukim in the Torah are important, and therefore you're standing up As is. On Shavuos, there's a different reason Rav Soloveitchik suggested why we stand up for the Aseres HaDibros, and that is because it's like Maimon Har Sinai. We are reenacting the experience of Har Sinai, and at Har Sinai, as we know, everybody stood up, so that's why maybe on Shavuos there's a little bit of a different rationale for standing up while we recite the Aseres HaDibros. But during the year when we recite the Aseres HaDibros, perhaps there is what to talk about, there's what to argue, maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't, but certainly if you stand from the beginning of that Aliyah, that would be a way to get out of all the problems. So let's just quickly review, just to remind everybody, next week we're not going to have a shiur, but let's just review what we spoke about today. The Aseres HaDibros, as we know, are a most fundamental part of the Torah. That is Yisod Kol HaTorah Kula. That's what the Rambam writes. It's Reishis Hadas. That is considered the most important part of everything that the Torah has. That's what the Medrash tells us. It has Taryag Osios to remind us of all of the halachas in the Torah that we should be aware of. Based on that, because of the centrality of the mitzvah of the Aseres HaDibros, this is why in the Beis HaMikdash, every day they used to recite the Aseres HaDibros in the context of their tefillah. Why is it that we don't recite it in the shuls outside of the Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara tells us because there was a concern that maybe people will get a mistaken impression and say that that's the only authentic part of the Torah, and a different part of the Torah is not as important, is not as authentic as the recitation of the Aseres HaDibros proper. Based on that, the Gemara says in Erevin also that one should not say Shmuazu na v'shmuazu einana. A person should never walk away from one part of Torah and say, oh, this part of Torah really excites me, this is really beautiful, this is really wonderful, because that has an implication that perhaps the rest of the Torah is not as exciting, is not as interesting, and is not as engaging or relevant to you, which is not something that one should be saying. We then spoke about whether or not the Aseres HaDibros are allowed to be posted in the shul. The Magen Avraham writes you shouldn't have a poster of it. However, we do know that many shuls have it on top of the yaron, have it on the parochas, and perhaps one suggestion why that's permissible is because since it's on top of the yaron, which is housing the Sefer Torah itself, nobody will be led to a mistaken impression and think that the Aseres HaDibros are the only part of the Torah. Then we spoke about the mitzvah of standing in front of a Sefer Torah, which is learned out from the obligation to stand for a Talmud Chacham. Based on that, we got into the issue about whether one is allowed to sit during the reading of the Torah itself. And as we know, there is no obligation to stand, no real strict obligation to stand while the Torah is being read unless you are the one who is reading it. If you are just a shomea, if you are just a participant, somebody who's listening, you do not have an obligation to stand. However, we do find throughout the world that there is a custom that people stand while we read the Shira, while we read the Aseres HaDibros. And the question that we mentioned at the end was whether or not that is something that is advisable. The Rambam writes very strongly that that's something that he feels is not appropriate, because the Rambam feels that's along the same lines as the consideration that the Gemara has about not standing up, about not reciting the Aseres HaDibros in your tefillah, not highlighting one part of the Torah over the other. However, Moshe Feinstein and others argue that there's nothing to be concerned about. Havu de lo safala, there's no reason to add on to that which the Gemara already said was usher, because nowadays, really, perhaps it's not really so relevant to our generation. We don't really have so many minim, so many apikursim that are running around looking for opportunities to trick people and convince them that what they're doing is not really authentic. Okay?